So today's daf is daf Yud Gimel. We'll start on daf Yud Beis, Amud Beis. And we're looking two dots, which are two lines up before the end of Yud Beis, Amud Beis. The Mishnah was talking about the Chazan. The Chazan is not the way we call a Chazan. But the Chazan is the person who's in charge of Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos. And the Mishnah says, Be'emes Omru HaChazan, and the next part of the Mishnah is, Roa Heichon HaTinokos Korin Aval Hu Lo Kore. Which means the following, that the children on Friday night would be reading the Parashios, and that was supervised by their Rebbe, the Malamed Tinokos. And the Chazan wanted to hear their reading, and we'll soon see why. He himself is not allowed to read because we have a Mishnah that has a gzera that we don't allow reading La'or HaNer, because in those days that they didn't have electricity, all the light came from the candles, and the candles were oil in a receptacle that had a wick on the bottom, and there was always a chashash hatoya that he might tilt the ner, feed the oil towards the wick, and that would be a malacha of Havara, one of the malachas of Shabbos. So the Mishnah says that the Chazan should not be reading. He's listening to the Tinokos, to the children, but he himself is not reading because he's not allowed to read from the Or HaNer. The question is whether the children are allowed to read from the Or HaNer, and that we'll get to soon. So the Gemara asks the following stira. Va'amrit Resha, the beginning of the Mishnah says, Roeh. Now what does that mean? Roeh. Roeh heichan atinokos korin. If he's looking to see where they're reading in the Torah, then my love, doesn't it mean likros, that not only is he looking at them, but he's reading along with them. And that's against the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says, Aval hu lo kore, he's not allowed to read, only the children are allowed to read. Lo. So the Gemara says, no. When the Mishnah says that Roeh, he should see where the Tinokos are reading, it doesn't mean that he himself is reading, but rather Lesader Roshe Parshios, Parshiosov. What he's allowed to see is where the children begin a parsha. The children would teach him, as they were learning, where each parsha begins. And why is this so important? When the Chazan calls up people to read from the Sefer Torah, he has to know to show them exactly where they should start reading, where the parasha begins and where the parasha ends. In some cases it's clear from the Sefer Torah, in other cases it's not. We have what's called a stuma, and we don't know exactly where a parasha begins and where it ends. So the Malamed Tinokos would supervise the children and tell them where they should start. The children were learning where the parasha begins, that's called Roshei Parashios. And as a result of the fact that the Chazan would hear the children read the Roshei Parashios, he would begin to remember where the parasha begins. And then since he was a pretty fine expert in the Parashios, he would remember where the parasha continues, and he would review it in his mind. He was not allowed to read it from the Sefer Torah, because we don't read Lior HaNer. So in the Lashon of the Rishonim says, Umargil Atzmo Bipiv Lekrosam. What he does is he gets used to reading it. Imagine if you know a book, and the way you remember the content of the book is by remembering the beginning of each chapter. Each chapter has a certain beginning to it. So the Chazan would remember the beginning of each chapter, and then he would remember the balance of that chapter in his mind, because again, he was an expert. And as soon as he heard the Roshei Parashios, which he learned from the children, he would be able to review in his mind the parasha. He'd be able to guide the Ola, the person who would get an Aliyah, because in those days the Ola himself would read from the Sefer Torah, and he had to know the Tamim, he had to know where the Psukim end, and the Chazan was able to guide him because he was listening to the Roshei Parashios. And the Roshei Parashios would stimulate his memory so that now he can remember the Nekudos, the Tamim, the Psukim, and there would be no mistake in the Kriyas HaTorah. V'chein Omar Rabba Bar Shmuel, Shmuel says the following, that even though the Chazan is not allowed to read the Parsha, Aval Misader Hu Roshei Parsha Yosef, but he could sort of peek over the shoulder of the children, the shoulders of the children, and get an idea where they started each Parsha, and that they would allow him to do. So the Gemara says, V'kula Parsha Lo, are you telling me that the rest of the Parsha, the balance of the Parsha, he's not allowed to read? And here we turn to Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Meisvei, we learned in a Braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Hatinokos Shel Beis Rabban Hayeladim, these are the children that learn in Beis Rabban under the supervision of their Rebbe. Hayim Misadrin Parshio Sehen V'Korin Lior Haner. It seems that they allowed the children to read the entire Parsha, looking at the light of the candle, not just the Roshei Parshios, because here the word Roshei Parshios is omitted. It says Parshios Seyan, the entire Parsha. So the first answer to the Gemara is Ibois Ema. Maybe we have to add one word to this Braisa, Roshei Parshiosov. When it says Mesadrin Parshios Seyan, it means they would only be able to read from the Aranea the beginning of each Parsha. The second pshat, no, we're going to take it literally. They would read the entire parasha. The shiny tinokos, how could we allow the tinokos to read this, the full parasha? Somebody might come to tamper with the oil. Hol the emas rabba aleihem. Because they were supervised by the Rebbe, they had a certain natural fear of the Rebbe. And people in my father's generation told me that they actually feared the Rebbe in those days, not like the children today, but anyway. He said, therefore, lo atzi latzluye, we're not afraid that the children might come to tip over the receptacle and violate the Iser of Havara. So just to summarize, what the Mishnah is telling us is that for the sake of the children and their learning, we allowed the children to read Lior HaNer, and according to the final opinion of the Gemara, even to read the entire parasha. The Chazan was not allowed to read Lior HaNer. He didn't have what's called Emas Rabo Aleihem. He didn't have that deterrent. And therefore he might come to Hatoya. So he's included in the Gzera that we're not allowed to read Lior HaNer. But what he would do is he would look over the shoulders of the children to get an idea of Roshei Parshios, where each parasha began. That would give him, stimulate his memory, he would review the parasha in his mind, it would be fresh in his mind so that tomorrow when they read the Torah, he would be able to guide the people who got an aliyah, where they should start, and how the parasha should be read. Now we go on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Kayotze bo, another gzera that the Chacham were worried about, is lo yochal hazov im hazova, Mipnei Hergel Avera. You have two people, a man and a woman, husband and wife, and they both have contracted Tumas Ziva. Now, if he would have a relationship with her, they both would be Chayav Kares. Her status is equal to that of a Nida. And the question we're going to ask is, why does the Mishnah mention that he was a Zav? L'chor, that's totally irrelevant. What's relevant is that she's a Zava, and that generates the Iser. So we don't want them to have an intimate relationship by eating together. Now, I'm not sure what eating together means. Does it mean they're both eating at the same table, or more likely they're eating from the same plate? And that creates a kind of intimacy, a kind of romantic relationship, which might culminate in an act of a chiyuv kares. So we tell them, don't eat from the same plate. Tanya, we learned in a brisa. Now this brisa is going to lavish praise on the people of Israel. Back in the day, the people of Israel were very careful not to eat something that's tameh. Even though technically, according to the law, they'd be allowed to eat something that's tameh. We're not talking about a Kohen who's going into the serve in the Migdash. But nevertheless, the people were very careful about taharos. So Rav Shimon ben Elazar says, "Bo re'eh, I want to show you ad heichan partza means gavra. Gavra means to be intense. Hatara b'Yisrael. That commitment to purity was so intense. Shalosha ninu. The Mishnah didn't even have to tell me lo yochal hatar im atmeya. That if he's tar, he's in a purification. He's purified, and she's tmeya." It might lead, if they eat together, to hergel aveda, it might lead to some sort of act of intimacy. That the Mishnah didn't even have to tell me. Why? Because if she was a zava and he was tar, he wouldn't eat with her for a different reason. Because she, by having contact with the food, would be metame the food, and he was tar, he would not eat even chulin, which is not hegdesh, Bituma. So there was no need to institute any sort of gzeira to prohibit a tar from eating with a tmeya. That was almost spontaneous. That was natural. Because of their care and their concern about eating dvarim tmeyim, things that had contracted tuma. Ella, but the Mishnah wants to tell me, lo yochal azovim azova mipnei hergel avera. We had to institute a gzeira in the case where he's a zov and she's a zava, because once they're both tmeim, he would not be inhibited about eating with her. He's already in a state of tuma. There's no issue of eating macholos tmeim, because he himself is tame. Any food he puts in his mouth is going to be tame. He's tame. But they had to institute a gzera, because in this case, since he would eat with her intimately, he might come to violate the Isur Nida. But as far as a case where he's tar and she's tmeya, we didn't even need a gzera. That was natural, that was spontaneous, that was because of the Jewish commitment to tara. People in a state of tara would not want to eat macholos tmeya, something that contracted tumah. But in the case where he's already tamei, the Mefarshim had another point. If he's a zav and she's a zova, they're both a little bit weak physically, in that state of illness, and therefore they would probably likely not have an act of intimacy, but nevertheless, the Chachamim were worried it could happen, and therefore they said they shouldn't eat together. Kayotzebo, another gzera that we find, the Bryce at the end continues and says, Lo yochal zav parush im zav ha'aretz. There's something called a parush. Today, maybe you heard in Yerushalayim, there's people, they call themselves the Prushim. The original word parush refers to people who are very careful about eating everything betara, even chulin. Again, not hegdesh. Hegdesh, you're not allowed to eat betumah, that's for sure. But even when they ate chulin, which is not sanctified, nevertheless, they were very careful. They were Prushim. They only wanted to eat everything betara. Now, there's a zav, and he's a parush. There's another zav who's an amaretz. The amaretz is not careful about avoiding eating chulin betara, about eating chulin betumah. In other words, he's not up on this whole thing. To him, it doesn't matter whether he's eating chulin betara, eating chulin betumah. And we don't want the zav who's a parush to eat together with the zav who's an amaretz. Why? Shemayar gilenu etzlo. He'll get used to eating together with the Amoritz. So the Gemara asks, v'chimar gilo etzlo mayhavi. What's the problem if he gets used to eating with an Amoritz? Ela ema, but we should say, shemayar gilenu dvarim tmeim. That maybe, since this Amoritz is not careful about the difference between tum and tara, he'll end up feeding the parush something that's tumet. So the Gemara again doesn't understand what's going on. Atu zav parush lav dvarim tmeim achil. He himself is a zav. The parush himself is tamei. And whatever he eats is by definition tamei. So who cares if the zav is going to feed him something, the zav amaretz is going to feed him something that's tamei. Everything he's eating is tamei. Omer Abaye, gzera shem yachilenu dvarim sheinam misukanim. You have to change the language of the Braisa. The Braisa is not referring to dvarim tmeim, but rather dvarim she'enam misukanim. Now that word misukanim is a technical word that refers to trumos and maisros. And as you know, before you mafresh trumos and maisros, the status of the food is tevel. And we're afraid that this Amoretz is going to feed the Parush Tevel. Why? Because the Amoretz is not careful about Afrosh's Trumas and Maestros. You know, it costs him too much money, so he finds some sort of an excuse. And it could be that this Amoretz is going to put food on the table, or he's eating from a plate that has Tevel on it. Maybe if the Parush is used to eating together with the Amoretz, he might come to eat something that's Tevel. Rav Amar, no, that can't be. We have a principle that Rav Ami Ha'aretz Ma'aser in him, that we can rely on most of the people, even if they are not the greatest scholars. One thing they were careful about, they were careful to be Mafrish Ma'aser. They wouldn't put Tevel on the table to eat table. That's a very severe isur. It's achiv misa b'dei shamayim. Hello. So why is it that we don't have the parish getting used to eating together with the Amoretz? Shemiyei rogil etzlo v'yachilenu dvarim tmeim b'yimei taraso. In other words, even though the parish now is a zav, he himself is tamei, and therefore what difference it make if the Amoretz will give him food that's tamei? But once he gets used to eating with him, he might eat with him even when he's in a state of tara. So even though now he's a zav, don't eat with an Amoretz, because tomorrow, when you finish with your ziva and you purify yourself, you'll still be used to eating with this Amoretz, and it'll feed you dvarim tmeim. Now, Rabosa, we're going to start a new sugya. It's very much related to the previous sugya about not eating together with someone because of that intimacy. And we made a gzera that, you know, if two people eat from the same plate, who knows what that could lead to. And the Gemara wants to know, how far do we go with this? A man is married to a woman, and now she's in a state of nida. She's a zava, she's a nida. Do they have to sleep in two different beds? Ibailu, the Gemara asked the question, nida, Maushe Tishan and Bailu, can they sleep in the same bed, husband and wife? He bibigda, vehu bibigdo. They'll wear clothing, and there's no nakedness. Do we have to worry that they might have an intimate act and she's a nida, that would be an isakari? So do we say no? Once they realize they're only allowed to sleep in the same bed because they're wearing clothing, that'll remind them that she's in a state of nida, and that'll keep them far one from each other. This is the Gemara's suffix. We're going to spend a good deal of time trying to answer this question. We start with Rav Yosef. Omer Rav Yosef, Toshma. I have a Mishnah in Masechta Chulin, and I'm going to make an equation or an analogy between that Mishnah and this question of who bibigdo vehi bibigdo vehi bibigdo. What we're talking about now is a person sitting at a table, and on the table he has both milchiks and fleishiks. He's got oaf, he's got chicken, and he has gvina and he has cheese. So the Mishnah says, ha'of ola im ha'gvina al ha'shulchan v'eino nechal divrei Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai are very laid back about this. Usually Beit Shammai are machbir, but here they're mekil. And they say, you know what? We're not going to be afraid that if you have chicken and cheese on the same table, that you're going to come to eat them together. Of course, you're not allowed to eat them together, but you're going to eat them separately. Now you're eating the cheese, or now you're eating the chicken. We're not going to be afraid that because they're both on the same table, he might come to eat them. Now, this all has to do with the fact that oaf, chicken with milk, is only derabanan. On a Doraisa level, only basar behema, the meat of an animal, is called gidi, lo sochal gidi b'chalev imo. So in the case of oaf, Beit Shammai would be mekil, and they would allow you to eat oaf, chicken, and cheese on the same table, again, not together. But Beis Hillel omrim, lo ola, You cannot put them both on the shulchan together. V'lonecha. We're afraid that if he puts them on the same table, he might come to eat both of them. Says Rav Yosef, in a parallel way, we have to be very careful about a nida who's sleeping in the same bed with her husband, even if they're both wearing clothing, because it might come to an avera. Because since we accept Beis Hillel, and we're afraid about two things that are together on the same table, we also have to be afraid about a husband and wife on the same bed. So the Gemara says, Shani Yosom, Rav Yosef, your analogy is not perfect. That case is different. Deleka Deos, because he's sitting alone at the table. No one is going to remind him. He may forget himself and eat cheese and chicken together. But in the case of Anida and Bilo, with the two people in the bed, one will certainly remind the other one, and they won't come to violate an Avera. Hachinami Mistabra. And I'm going to bring you a proof that the logic of Halach is such that when you have two people, which is called Deos, we are not afraid because one will remind the other. The Hechadika Daya El Shine, it's different when you have two people. The Katani Sefer, because in that very same Mishnah of Yosef that you quote from Chulin, it says in the Sefer, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Shnei Achsin Noim, if two people are guests in an inn, Ochlin Al Shulchan Echad, they're allowed to eat from one table. Zelchel Bosov, Zelchel Gvina, Vein Choshesh, we're not worried if he's eating Fleishiks and he's eating Milchiks, that maybe one will feed the other one. Because since there are deos, the two people, when there are two people, one will remind the other. So now the Gemara wants to say, wait a minute. You know what? I would quote that same Mishnah and come to the opposite conclusion. You want to say that a husband can sleep with his wife in the same bed? They're both wearing clothing because she'll remind him and he'll remind her. Just the opposite is true. V'lav itmar Allah. We have an insight into that Mishnah. Omer Avchanin Bar Ami Omer Shmuel Lo Shonu. When are two guests in a hotel allowed to eat at the same table? This one's eating milchiks and this one fleishiks. Ella, it's only in a case of Ein Makir She Ein Makirin Zedze. They're total strangers. But says Shmuel, Avol Makirim Zedzef, they're good old buddies, Asurim, they're not allowed to eat from the same table. Why? Because since they have a certain friendship, we're afraid that one might feed the other one. Hachinami here too, in the case of Anida and her husband, Makirim Zedzedinu, they have an intimate relationship, and therefore we should come to the opposite conclusion that we should not allow them to sleep in the same bed. So don't give me this Deos business and say, he'll remind her and she'll remind him. Because in fact, two people that know each other cannot eat at the same table. Zeh Basar v'zeh Cholav. So what says Hachi Hashta? You know what? Let's re-evaluate the situation. You want to compare Anida and her husband with two guests in a hotel that know each other. Hasam, there in the case of guests, Deos Ik, I admit that there are two people, but Shinui Leka. You haven't created some sort of heker, something that would remind them that they should stay away from each other. But Hach, in the case of Anidu Baila, Iko, we have two things. Number one, Deos, the two people, the Iko Shinui. They normally would sleep together very intimately in the same bed, but here we're telling them, no. You know, you wear your begadim and you wear yours. That itself is a shinui, it's a change, which is going to remind them. And all of halacha, in the case of gzeros, is always built on a concept called shinui. And whenever you tell someone to do it exactly in this way, he'll remind himself that he's in a very dangerous situation. He has to be very meticulous, very careful. So at this point in the Gemara seems to be inclined towards being matir, anido baila, when they're both wearing clothing in the same bed. We have a deos, and we have two shinui. They're two people, and they're wearing clothes. Iko diamri. Now the Gemara says that Rav Yosef, that we quoted earlier, brought a proof from a different part of the Mishnah, which we learned earlier. And here's what Rav Yosef was saying. Toshma, let's listen to this Mishnah. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Shnei Achsenoim, Ochlen al Shulchanechet, Zeh, Ochel Bosim, Zeh, Ochel Gvinov, Idmar Allah, Omer Rav Hanan, Bar Ami, Omer Shmuel, Lo Shonu, El Shein Makirin, Zeh, Zeh, Val Makirin, Zeh, Zeh, Asur. That if you have two guests in a hotel, if they don't know each other, we allow one to eat meat and the other milk. If they know each other, they're very friendly, then it's prohibited. And therefore, Hani Nami, this case too, in the case of a Nidu Baila, Makirin Zed Zeninu, and therefore it should be awesome. So whereas in the original formulation of Rav Yosef, the way we had the first transmission, he was trying to bring a proof that since we don't allow a person to eat milk and meat from the same table, therefore we don't allow a husband and wife to sleep in the same bed, but then we rejected it by saying no, in that case there's only one person, but in the case of the Isha Ubaila there are two people. Now Rav Yosef is saying, well, even in the case of two people we have to be Machmir, because Makirin said they know each other. And the Gemara rejects it by saying, Hasam Deos Ika Shinui Leka, Hacha Ika Deos Veika Shinui. The Gemara says, Rav Yosef, you have no proof from that Mishnah in Chulin, because there we only have Deos, we have two people, but they know each other and they're doing it in a normal way. But here we have two people, and on top, they're doing it in an unnatural way. Tashma, so now the Mishnah is being quoted. Our mission is being quoted to come to some proof. The Mishnah says, "Lo yochal azovim azova mishum hergel avera." That we're not going to allow a husband and his wife to eat together because they might come to do an avera. They might come to have an intimacy between them, and that's a violation of an isur kares. And therefore, even though there are two deos, him and her, they can't eat together from the same plate. Is Hachinami here too? In the case of a zav and zava, deos ika, shiru leka. The Gemara says you have no proof from our Mishnah, because again, in our Mishnah, they're both eating together in a normal way. Our case is where they're sleeping in a bed in an unnatural way. And that's going to remind them. Tashma, I'm going to quote another braisa. And this braisa is pretty explicit. It really addresses this very question that we've been dealing with. The braisa begins by quoting a pasuk in Yechezkel that's describing a great tzaddik. How is the Navi describing the great tzaddik? The pasuk says, El Haharim Lo Ochal, the Ein of Lo Nasa El Gilule Beis Yisrael. So this person keeps himself very far away from certain abominations in Israel. Es Eish Yisrael Lo Tima. You know, he doesn't have an intimacy with a married woman. Vel Isha Nida Lo Yikrav, and he doesn't come near a Nida, even if it's his own wife. And the Braisa wants to point out the two clauses here that are brought together. One is Lo Tive Es Eish Yisraelu, and the other is Lo Tive Es Isha Nida. Makish Isha Nida Li Eish Yisraelu. In one fell swoop, in one verse, with B'Neshima Achas, one breath, he equates his relationship to another man's wife with his relationship with his own wife who's a Nida. And what is this Hekesh coming to teach me? Ma, just like in the case of Eish Yisraelu, there's no question about it. They would not be allowed to sleep in the same bed, even if who bibigd over he bibigda asur. It's definitely asur. In fact, a man is not allowed to be alone in the same locked room with another man's wife. That's an isur yichud, which is doraisa. How much more so they can't sleep in the same bed? Is af so too? Ishto nida, in the case of his wife who's a nida, hu bibigdo vehi bibigda asur. Just like in the case of a married woman, he's not allowed to be with her in a bed, so too in the case of his own wife who's a nida, he's not allowed to be with her in the same bed. Shema Amina, and this is the Gemara's final conclusion, that from this braisa we can conclude without a doubt, that a man is not allowed to be in the same bed with his wife, who's a nida, even though they're both wearing clothing. The Gemara now points out that, in fact, although we have a conclusion here based on the Braisa, but there is another opinion. Upliga de Rabbi Pedas. And this final conclusion, that it's Asur, is against Rabbi Pedas. He had a more liberal opinion about this question. The Amar Rabbi Pedas, lo Asra Torah el kurva shel gili arayas bilvat. The Torah itself only prohibited an act of gili arayas, meaning the sexual act itself, tashmish amita. Shenemar, how do I know this? The Torah says, ish, ish, el kol she'er b'saro, lo sikruvu legalos erva. Don't come close to a woman for the act of gili arayas, meaning the act of intercourse. But other kinds of kirva, let's say they're together, that is awesome in Rabbanon. But if he's wearing his clothes and she hers, then even the Rabbanon don't have a gzera. So although the final conclusion of Rav Yosef that we saw before is that a man and a woman, she's a nida, cannot sleep in the same bed even though they're wearing clothing, and that's prohibited, there is an opinion, a dissenting view of Rabbi Pedas, and he says that kirva, when they have some sort of close, intimate relationship, let's say, for example, he's kissing her, he's hugging her, all that is prohibited midrabbanon. Only gili arayas is doraisa, and the rabbanon are not going to be worried about a case where they're not having any contact with each other, they're both wearing their clothes. That's the opinion of Rabbi Pedas. Now the Gemara tells us about Ula. What exactly was Ula's opinion on this question? And we find the contradiction. Ula ki havi osi mi bei rav, when he came back from the Beis Medrash, havi menashik lehu liachvase abei chadaihu, which means he would kiss his own sister on the chest. I guess that was the minhag in those days. Vi amrila, others say abei yodaihu. No, he would kiss her on her hands, but he would not kiss her chest. That was too intimate. So it seems that Ula held that the prohibition on a Doraisa level is Tashmish, on a Drabana level it's Archokas Basar, they shouldn't have any Kiruv Basar, but that's only Drabana. In the case of a sister, he thought he could be more lenient about it. That was his minhag. But Upligi Didei Adidei, but he argues against himself. In other words, there's an inner contradiction between his minhag and his actual formulation of the halacha. The Amar Ula said, "Afilu shum kurva aser." You're not allowed to have any physical contact whatsoever with an erva, and his sister is an erva. Mishum, and the reason for that is lech lech omri nazira schar sar lekamra lo tirkav. When a nazir comes near a vineyard, we tell him schar schar, walk around the vineyard, but don't go into the vineyard itself. If you go into the vineyard, you might be tempted to eat the grapes, and a nazir is enjoined from eating grapes. Here too also, when it comes to getting close to an erva, we have to be very careful, and we have to go all the way around, and not come to any situation that might lead to an avera. So how can he therefore hug or kiss his sister? So we're left with this contradiction, and the Gemara comes to no definite conclusion. According to some of the commentaries, in order to understand Ula, we'd have to see a Gemara in Ksubis. The Gemara there talks about Rav Ada Bar Ava, and Rav Ada Bar Ava at a wedding would take the kala and he would ride her on his shoulders and dance with her. And the Gemara says that Talmidim asked him, how are you allowed to do that? That's Kiruv, that's closest to an Erva, she's a married woman. And he said, Nidmas aleim kikura v'alma. To me, she's like carrying a board. In other words, I have no sexual feelings over here because I'm on that level. So it could be that that's Ula. Even though Ula understood that for most people, it would certainly be usur to have any sort of kirva, to kiss or hug your sister. But for me, I'm a tzaddik, I'm on a level, I don't have to worry about it. That's just one approach. Okay. Now the Gemara tells us a very, very troublesome story about one of the Talmidim. Tana de Elio. We have a braisa that apparently was a tradition of the name of Elio Anavi. Maisa v'talmid echad, a story about a certain Talmid. Sheshona harbe. He studied a lot of Mishnayos. In those days, your expertise in Torah was judged and gauged by your knowledge of Mishnah. V'kara harbe, and he knew the Torah. V'shimesh talmidi chachamim harbe. And he was very involved with the talmidi chachamim, trying to learn from them, trying to understand their reasoning. And yet umes bechatzi yomav. And he left a widow, dying in the middle of his years. V'haisa ishta no teles tfilov. And she would take his tefillin. Umachazartom, and she would surround, she would walk around, circulate v'bati knesios v'bati midrashos. The Amalam, and she turned to the people sitting and learning, and she says, "Ksiv baTorah." The Torah says, "Ki hu chayecha v'yorech yomecha," that Torah study will give you arichas yomim. Bali, my husband, sheshana harbe v'kona harbe v'kara harbe. And now we're going on to Yud Gimel Amid Beis. V'shimeish talmidi chachamim harbe b'pnei ma meis b'chatzi yomav. Why did he die so young? Nobody knew what to answer to her. Probably what they were thinking was that she misinterpreted the pasuk, because the pasuk is not referring to life in this world, but to life in the next world. And the Mefarshim want to know, why didn't they give her that answer, which is the real answer to the question? But perhaps they felt that she wasn't ready for such an answer in her psychological state of grief. Pam achas nisarachti etzlo. Now this is Elio Anovi. I was once a guest in her house. V'hoisa mesicha kol oso ma'ora. And she was telling the whole story again, how her husband was so dedicated to Torah study, and yet he died prematurely. V'amarti labiti. Only Elio HaNavi could ask her this question. V'meni duseich ma'u etzlech. How was he during the time that you were in Nida? Amro li, she said to me, chas v'shalom, what are you insinuating? Afilu b'etzba k'tana lo nogabi. He never even touched my pinky. B'meili bunayach ma'o etzloch. But what happens during what's called Zayin Nikiyin? So for 7 days she's a nida, and then she has to count seven Nikiyin, seven clean days. That's already on a lower level. How did he behave towards you? She said then he was more lenient. We were already in the second stage. Achal imi, v'shasa imi. He would eat together with me. He would drink together with me. We had a very respectful relationship at that point. V'yoshen imi b'kiruv basar. And he would sleep with me in the same bed during that second week of Zayin Yemei Anikiyin. Below also daito al dover acher. But he never had in mind to violate the Isur Torah. Amarti la. Elio HaNavi responded, very harsh, Baruch HaMakom Sha'arogo, blessed be God that took his life, Shelo Nasa Ponim LaTorah, because he would not oblige the Torah. The Torah has Archaka. The Torah says, Isha Betumas Nidasa Lo Sikravu, don't come near her. And even though she was in the second stage, which is called Yemei Libuna, the days of Nikiyim, but nevertheless, she still has the status of Nida. She hasn't yet gone to Mikvah. And the Torah says, Lo Sikruvu, don't go close to her. Hare Omer Torah says, Elio Vel Isha Benidas Tumas Lo Sikrav. And that Iser applies all the way until the moment of her Tvila B'Mikvah. And therefore, this violation, what, where he slept with you intimately in a bed together, even though there was no tashmish amita, that itself is a violation of the Torah law of lo sikra. And the Rambam actually writes in his Hilchos Yisurei Biyah, based on this Gemara, that all the harchakos, all those provisions that the Torah says stay away and distance yourself from a woman who's prohibited, all that is doraisa. That's all based on this pasuk, Isha betumas nidasa lo sikra. Ki asa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Omer, he declared with regard to a woman and being close to Bekiruv Basar, he said, Mita Chadahavi. He said that they could sleep in the same bed. Why? Because the bed was very wide and there was no Kiruv Basar. They didn't actually come together, one Basar, one flesh touching the other. So that's the way he understood the violation of Lo Sikra. Again, that Talmud that we said before was Yashen Imi Bekiruv Basar. There was physical contact. But Rav Dimi said that as long as there's no physical contact, then in a large bed, we can be makil. But Maravi Amri, however, the other opinion is Omar Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Sinar Mafsik Beino Leveino, that it's not enough that they sleep in the same bed without Kiruv Basar, but we have to be more machmir. And the final halacha is, as you know, I don't have to tell you, that a woman during Nida has to sleep in a different bed. Now we start the Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. V'elu min halachos sha'amru ba'lias Chananya ben Chizkia ben Goron. In the attic of the house of Chananya, they came with 18 laws, as we'll soon see. Olu Levakro, the Chachamim came to visit him, and amongst the Chachamim that came to visit him were the Talmidim of Beit Shammai and the Talmidim of Beit Hillel. And they started getting into halachic discussions, and they dealt with various halachic questions and issues, and they had a big machlokas. There was a great controversy that broke out between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel for 18 different laws. Nimnu means they stood up and they took a vote. Virabu Beit Shammai al Beit Hillel. And the Talmidim of Beit Shammai were in the majority. Ushmonasar Dvarim Gazru, and they instituted Bo Bayom on that very day 18 different Gzeros. And they paskin Halacha like Beit Shammai because the Rov, the majority, was in favor of these Gzeros. That was Beit Shammai. Two of those Gzeros we learned in our previous Mishnah. If you remember, you're not allowed to read something to the light of the candle on Shabbos. And number two, you're not allowed to get rid of these bugs. And the balance of those 18 gzeros, we're going to learn about in the Mishnayos, in the rest of this chapter, the first chapter of Masechta Shabbos. Amalei Abayla Rav Yosef. Elu ove elu tnan. Elu tnan ove elu tnan. There were two different versions of the first word in our Mishnah. One had a Vav, and one did not have a Vav. So Abaye asked Rav Yosef, which of the two versions is correct? And now he analyzes the difference between these two versions. One letter, Ve'elu. Ve'elu Tnan, if we have the Girsa Ve'elu, then what it means is, Hani Da'amaron, those two Gzeros that were mentioned in the previous Mishnah on Daf Yud Aleph, that you shouldn't use the Aranair, etc. So Ve'elu means Vav Mosif Al Inyan Rishon. Whenever you see a Vav, it's adding to what came before it. So the balance of the 18, you know, we have first these two Gzeros that are codified in the previous Mishnah, and the balance of the 18, the next 16, we're going to learn in the Mishnayos that are coming up in the next perek. For example, we're going to have an issue about right before Shabbos, if you're allowed to put clothing into a dye, and during the Shabbos the color is going to seep into the bgadim, and many, many other different gzeros. Oh, or, says Abaye, what about the second gear? So, elutnan. Elutnan without the vav means deba'ina lemeimer lekamon. Only the mishnayos that were coming, that are forthcoming in the rest of the parak, not the two gzeros that we learned in the previous. Because once you drop the vav, then elu begins a whole new discussion. So, for example, the Mishnah on Daf Yud Zayin is going to say Ein Sharon Dio, right? That we can't create this dyeing process on Erev Shabbos. So that's the beginning of the 18. That's number one on the list. That's called Elu Tanan. But if you have Vir Elu with the Vav, then what that means is that we already started our count with the first two Gzeros that were recorded in the Mishnah on Daf Yud Aleph. Toshma. The Gemara now quotes a brisa to prove the first possibility, ve'elu tanan, that you have a vav. It says in the brisa, ein polin li'araner, v'ein korin li'araner, we don't use the flame in order to check out the bugs, or to check out how to read a text. And then it says, ve'elu, with a vav, min halacho sha'amru, ve'alias Chananya ben Chizkiya ben Gaon. And these were amongst the halachos, the 18 gzeros that were voted on in the aliyah of Chananya. Shema minah ve'elu tanan. So we see clearly that this price is of the opinion ve'elu tanan. So the ein polin ve'en karen li'araner are the first two of the 18 gzeros. Tana rabbanon, we learned in a brisa, Mi kasav Megillas Tainus. At this point, the Gemara wants to give us a little bit of an introduction, a bio. Who was this Chananya ben Chizkiya that the Rabbanim, the Talmidim Beis Hillel Beit Shammai, went up to his attic and they made all these stupendous decisions? He was the author of a work that was called Megillas Tainus. What is Megillas Tainus? So if you ever learned Masechta Tainus, you'll know that there are certain days during the calendar year when we're not allowed to fast, because they're Yomim Tovim. And the reason Chachamim designated those days, marked them off on the Hebrew calendar as Yomim Tovim, and you're not allowed to fast on those days, you're not allowed to eulogize on those days, is because various miracles took place that saved the Jewish community. So who is the author of this Megillas Tainus, which is the authoritative source for a list of those calendar dates that are blackout dates as far as fasting is concerned? Block it out. Those are Yomim Tovim. Amru, and they answered, Chananya ben Chizkiya v'seyoso. It was this great leader named Chananya, together with his whole Chabura, and they were careful to mark those days on the calendar when we experience miracles. Shoyu mechavin es atzoros. Very strange. What does that mean? They loved the anguish and the difficulties. Tzoros. But the answer is, what it meant was, since they were very sensitive and aware of the tzoros, all sorts of gzeros against the Jewish people, decrees by the anti-Semites, and they knew exactly on which days God protected us and saved us from these tzoros. And these were the days that they marked off, designated as days of Yontif to be Meshaveach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they instituted an Isur Tainus. Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, you know what? We didn't write Masechta Megillas Tainus, and we don't have a list of those days. But afanu mechavin es hatzoros, we also appreciate these great miracles that God saved us from tzoros. Avol ma naaseh, but what can we do? Shim banu lichtov, if we would write all the tzoros and all the decrees and all the salvations of God, einonu maspikim, we would never be able to exhaust that every day God is saving us. These nisim are tediros, they're constant. And Dover Acher, and furthermore, Ein Shote Nifga. a shote, if you insult him, he's in his own world, he doesn't get insulted. He's totally callous because he's not with it. And we also, although we understand how many miracles there are, but we're like shotim. We don't even appreciate them. They're so constant, these miracles. If we would only know what our adversaries are planning against us and how many times God foiled their plans, we would appreciate God's miracles. But we can't do that. We just don't know how many miracles God brought about to protect us. The tzaras are every day. Dover Acher. Another explanation as to why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel did not author the Megillus Tainus. Ein besar hames margish bi Ismail. If you cut into the body of a dead person, he doesn't feel any pain. We're also like dead people. We have so many tzaras that we don't even feel the salvations. It goes from one tzara to the next. Ain't the Gemara says, is it really true that a dead body doesn't feel an autopsy? Va'amar Rav Yitzchak. Rav Yitzchak says, kosha harima lemes kimachat bibsar chai. That when the worms crawl in and they attack the body of a dead person, it's as painful to him as taking a needle and sticking it into a live person's flesh. Shenemar Apostle in Eov, ach besoro olav yichov, v'nafsho olav tevol. And this pasuk seems to indicate that the basar and the ke'ev and the suffering applies even to that of a dead person. Ema, so therefore we have to rewrite the braisa. Ein besar ames shegolo b'chai margish be'izmel. Which means that if you have how do you say in English, a tzaleket, I'm forgetting the word. After an injury, the skin becomes very very tough. What's the word for that in English? I don't remember.
Hardened.
What's it called?
Hardened.
Hardened, yeah, but what do you call it when you have a scar? Scar tissue.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the word I was looking for. So if you have scar tissue, then that scar tissue has no nerve endings to it. That's what he meant when he was describing us as a mess. We have a person, we don't realize how great he is, and we should remember him for good things. What's the greatness of Hananiah ben Chizkia? There were many scholars. What was unique about him? Besides which that he authored Megillus Tainus. Shelmole, who, if not for him, Nignaz Sefer Yechezkel, the Chachma Yisrael would have hidden the book of Yechezkel, and that book would have been excluded from the canon, from the holy works. And why? What did the Chachamim have against the book of Yechezkel? Shayu Dvarim Sosrim L'Divrei Torah. There are words and verses in Yechezkel that seem to contradict the laws of the Torah. For example, in the 44th chapter of Yechezkel, there's a whole chapter dedicated to the Kohanim and the special laws of the Kohanim. And it says there, called Nevela Utrefa Min Ha'Ofu Min Ha'Bahema Lo Yochlu HaKohanim. The Kohanim are enjoined from eating Nevela and Trefa, which sounds like only Kohanim cannot eat Nevela and Trefa. But us Yisraelim, we're not Kohanim, we're allowed to eat Nevela and Trefa. That's against the Torah law. Uma also. So what did this Hananiah ben Chizkiah do? Helulo, he brought up with him Shlosh Meos Garvei Shemen, 300 barrelfuls of oil, which would give him enough light to last through night after night after night, and maybe would help him also eat something. The Yoshev Alias, he went up to his attic, Udrashan, and he analyzed all these problematic texts. We only mentioned one of them in Sefer Yechezkel, Udrashan. And Drashan means he reconciled them. So, for example, we have a Gemara Masechta Menachos that says, why did Yechezkel HaNavi, this is based on Hananiah's reinterpretation, why did he have to tell the Kohanim that they're not allowed to eat Nevelu Trefa? And the reason for that is because the Torah allows a Kohen, in the case of what's called Chatas Ha'of, to eat the Basar, even though it wasn't Shechted. They did what's called Malika. And in Malika, there's no Shechita. So for you and I, we're not Kohanim. We would be enjoined from eating this because it's Nevela. And yet the Torah permits the Kohen to eat the flesh of these birds, of these chatos, even without shechita, with just malika. So therefore, Yechezkel HaNavi had to teach me, don't think that because the Torah allowed a Kohen to eat from chatos of after malika, that as if to say a Kohen is allowed to eat nevelu trefa. No. Kohen is also enjoined from eating the velu trefa. Even a Kohen is enjoined. Certainly we're enjoined. But you might think the Kohen, since he has one situation in which he's permitted to eat from the velu trefa, and that's the case of Malika Bechatas Ha'of, therefore you might think Bechlal is allowed to eat the velu trefa, Kamashmala, no. That's what Yechezkel HaNavi wanted to teach us. So basically, Hananya ben Chizkiah is famous now for three things. Number one, he saved Sefer Yechezkel. Number two, he was the author of Megillas Tainis. And number three, he was the one who organized the Talmidim Beisil Beit Shammai in his attic. And there they were Omed Leminyan, and there they voted in favor of 18 different gzeros, because Rabu Beit Shammai al Beisil. Okay then, Rabosai, we're going to stop here.